Schon ist eine Sommernacht vorbei. Vieles passiert hier in Offenbach am Main. Zwei Mädchen haben ihr Schicksal gefunden und sind gestern Nacht in meine Tunken. Die Schuld haben die Bull, denn sie haben nur zugesehen. So war's doch, ihr Hurensöhne. Pures Leben, ich atme tief durch. Doch ich krieg schwer Luft und hab Druck auf der Brust. Nimm einen Schluck vom Whisky gegen den Durst. Denn ohne ihn wär meine Seele erfroren. Nur Probleme und Sorgen. Hör, wie die Mutter weint, denn sie hat einen ihrer Söhne verloren. Tagtäglich nur Dram. Um einen Fall aufzulösen, sagt man, die Haare vom Täter waren schwarz. Das Auge vom Staat kann dich auch nachts sehen. Ich rede die Wahrheit, die Medien nur Schwachsinn. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Karnacken jumpen ab vor den abgefuckten Cops. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Aslas Zähne schnapp, paffen Haze, paffen Hasch. Sommernacht in Offenbach, sitzen wir auf dem Dach mit dem Blick auf die Stadt. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Sommernacht in Offenbach, Sommernacht in Offenbach. Blockromantik, paar Chayas, paar Girls laufen vorbei, Chabos pfeifen hinterher. Polizeistreifen machen es uns schwer. Ehestreit im vierten Stock, die Nachbarn machen Lärm. Starkenburger Ring, 4 Uhr nachts, Dietzenbach. Karin wurde erwischt mit 40 Kilo Hasch. Huren machen Feierabend, erst so jung schon am Blasen. In Saunaclubs für Geld, ob Royal, ob Oase. Fick die Straßen, so wie Chaka sagt. Die Köpfe gefickt und die Herzen vernarbt. Leerer Magen, nichts gegessen. Letzte Mahlzeit, die war gestern. Kripo stressen und geben Platzverbot, sprühen gerne Pfefferspray und sie schlagen zu, sich zu fetzen und bluten, das sind wir gewohnt. Mal lachen, mal weinen, nachts hier in O. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Karnacken jumpen ab vor den abgefuckten Cops. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Aslas Zähne schnapp, paffen Haze, paffen Hasch. Sommernacht in Offenbach, sitzen wir auf dem Dach mit dem Blick auf die Stadt. Sommernacht in Offenbach, Sommernacht in Offenbach, Sommernacht in Offenbach.
Viele Gestirne, die man uns hinhält. Ich war, als ich dich ansah. Wann? Draußen, bei den anderen Welten. Oh, diese Wege galaktisch, oh, diese Stunde, die uns die Nächte herüberwog in die Last unserer Namen. Es ist, Ich weiß es, nicht wahr, dass wir lebten. Es ging blind nur ein Atem zwischen dort und nicht da. Und zuweilen kometenhaft schwirrte ein Aug auf Erloschenes zu. In den Schluchten, da, wo es verglühte, stand sitzenprächtig die Zeit, an der schon empor und hinab und hinweg wuchs, was ist oder war oder sein wird. Ich weiß und du weißt, wir wussten nicht, wir waren ja da und nicht dort. Und zuweilen, wenn nur das Nichts zwischen uns stand, fanden wir ganz zueinander.
So hard, and you're so gentle. You're my strength and my power. My love will grow just like a flower, a flower, a flower, a beautiful flower. Growing every second, every minute, every hour. Just right when the sun shines bright, I'll be there when you want to hold you tight. You're my flower.
Power, 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 power Earth Search 2, a new adventure serial in time and space by James Follett. Telson, Shana, Darv, and Astra have left the Challenger to investigate a mysterious dish-shaped object drifting in space. They learn from Solaria, its control computer, that the object is Solaria D, an abandoned artificial sun, one of several that were designed to pour down life-giving solar energy on the Earth during its journey to a new star. In Solaria's hologram library, they discover that the Earth's destination, its new sun, was a star named Navita 6. Earth Search 2, Part 5, Sun Death.
That's the last of the star map holograms, Telson. Not one of them mentions Navita 6.
Yeah.
Oh, perhaps Darv and Astra have had more luck.
Why are there so few star maps, Solaria?
All the Solaria artificial suns were in orbit around the Earth. Therefore, there was no need for a Solaria crew to concern itself with astro-navigation.
I see.
Where the Earth went, so we went. Until I became unsafe and was abandoned.
So you have no means of propulsion, Solaria?
No, Shana.
Oh.
As I have been as helpful as possible, I will be grateful if you would answer some questions for me.
If we can, we will. Go ahead.
Your ship is of a pre-Solaric Empire design?
Yes.
That is most interesting, Telson. Does it have a computer control system like me?
It has two systems which I sincerely hope are not like you, Solaria. They are Angel 1 and Angel 2.
Ancillary guardians of environment and life.
Yes.
That is interesting. Then they are like me because they are free will computers.
Don't give her any more information.
Hmm?
Darv! Astra! Oh, what have you managed to... Astra, what's the matter?
It's nothing. It's just that we've had a bit of a shock.
We'll tell you about it in a minute. We did manage to find these hologram disks in the crew's quarters. What luck have you had?
None.
These disks are much smaller than the library ones.
Mm. They're among our more interesting discoveries, one of which was this, a portable hologram replicator. Is that correct, Solaria?
Yes, Darv.
You mean was a portable replicator, don't you?
Yes, it is a bit of a wreck. All of them appear to have been smashed by, careless androids.
You will find portable hologram disks of little interest. They were designed for engineers who wish to make memo recordings.
Yes, right now all I'm interested in is the whereabouts of Navita 6. Now surely, Solaria, somewhere in your memory there are star maps for this sector of the galaxy?
I'm sorry, Telson. Most of my facilities were assigned to routines to maintain the Solaria reactor and to look after my crew.
So you've no idea where Navita 6 is?
No. I heard the crew talking about it. I knew that it was the star that the people of Earth had selected as their new sun. But that is all. It did not concern me.
Solaria, did you know that Astra and I have been to the calibration room?
Of course.
What about it?
She knows. Don't you, Solaria?
Humans are so curious about everything that I saw little point in warning you about the calibration room, Astra. Perhaps I should have done so.
What about the calibration room, Darv?
You'd better come and see for yourselves.
Chief Engineer Halston, commanding officer of Solaria D. Those burns, you can't tell if it was a man or a woman.
Sandro Halston, a man.
Oh, 17, 18, there's 20 of them.
A dreadful accident. One of my androids encapsulated them for me to preserve them. In just over 1,000 years, my orbit around the nearby star group will take Solaria close enough to the nearest star to ensure orbital burial for them.
How did it happen?
It was after the weakness developed in my magnetic fields containing the plasma in the central fusion reactor. The resulting nuclear fission bursts caused the radiation levels to rise beyond a point where they could be controlled by my crew. That was why I was ejected from Earth orbit.
There's no radiation now.
No, the shuttle's hazard monitors would have warned us if there was.
Yes, but what happened to these crewmen? Why weren't they evacuated?
They refused to be evacuated because they wanted to save me if they could. They were cutting into a section of the reactor with photonic lances when a focusing coil on one of their lances failed. The burst of energy lasted no more than a millionth of a second. They could not have known what happened.
But why didn't Earth send up a shuttle to recover their bodies?
It happened after I was ejected from Earth orbit, and the radiation levels made it too dangerous for anyone, even androids.
You said you're a free will computer, Solaria.
Yes, Shana.
Why was it that you remain active after this artificial sun was ejected from Earth orbit? I mean, your central memory must have taken millions of hours to build. Even with a technology as advanced as Earth's, surely they would have wanted to keep you.
For what other purpose, Charlotte?
Well, I mean, as a backup computer for the other Solarias. As it is, you're useless, aren't you, Solaria? A superintelligence looking after a derelict artifact. And why was it that your communication systems were removed or destroyed?
I do not recall saying that they were.
You didn't. But you observed the presence of our starship before we arrived here.
Yes.
And you made no attempt to contact it.
That is so.
Therefore, it would seem that you have no communication facilities.
You are correct, of course. And in view of the assistance I have given you, I would like to be linked with the communication systems on your shuttle.
Who do you wish to contact?
Your guardian angels, of course.
Of course I understand the urgency of the situation, Bran. It's just that this artifact is going to prove difficult to salvage. It's made of an extremely tough material.
What sort of material?
It's metallic. Shana's working on an analysis. Once we know more about it, we'll know how to deal with it.
That doesn't explain why you failed to report to me at frequent intervals.
I can't get on with a salvage operation if I have to keep talking to you, young man. I don't like having to cope with a time lag. Also, there's interference on this channel. I'll call you in 2 or 3 hours.
I think we've got it. Sorry, Telson. You can blame me for the crackling noise.
What exactly are you and Astra doing?
But we're using the shuttle's power supply to run this hologram replicator.
Well, what's the point? The thing's smashed.
We think that only its internal power supply is damaged.
You know what you're doing, Dove.
Let them get on with it, Telson. What are we going to do about Solaria wanting to communicate with Angels 1 and 2?
She won't say why, but I don't see what we've got to lose by letting her. You damaged the shuttle's power systems, Dove, and
okay, I'll... Okay, sorry. Right, Astra, try loading a disk now.
Oh, the last one in the set?
Mm.
Right. Anyway, I don't trust Solaria.
I don't trust any free will computers.
No.
That's it.
But they are completely self-centered, therefore whatever Solaria's reasons are for wanting to contact Angel 1 and 2, you can be certain that they won't benefit.
We've done it. It's working. It's loading a disk.
Dove, you can't generate a replication field in a space shuttle. Shut it off.
No, it'll be all right. It's not a very large field.
Shut it off, I say.
No, Telson, let it run.
Then keep well back, outside the field.
Okay.
There's plenty of room.
This is Chief Engineer Sandra Halston. Can you see and hear me, Mr. President?
Go ahead, Halston. I hope this is going to be more positive than your last report.
I'm sorry, sir, but we've done everything we can.
You've got to stop her, Halston. Smash her central switching room. Do whatever you have to, but in the name of Earth, stop her.
There's nothing we can do. We can't get near her. She's got all the photonic lance welding androids guarding her switching room. I've already lost half my crew trying to get near her, and 4 men have been killed while destroying all the data link transmitter receivers. This short-range speech channel is all I've got left.
What's that noise?
It's the 2-minute sunburst threshold alarm. The cone will be sunbursting in 2 minutes at a 100% overload. Have you managed to disconnect the other computers?
Yes.
Total power, President Elkran. Total control over all the other Solaria computers, or I shrivel your largest city in 2 minutes. And you, Chief Engineer Halston, you will not defy me again. All my welding androids have been instructed to find you and destroy you.
She means it, Mr. President. From here, I can see all the repair and maintenance androids clearing from the dish. The auto countdown has started. There's no way I can stop her now.
We build free-will computers and turn our backs on the lessons our forefathers learned a million years ago.
It was the only way to achieve the effectiveness we needed over such a long period of time. Now, please, Mr. President, you've got to reverse the traction beams and eject Solaria D from orbit now.
She's got to be destroyed.
Cut her loose. She has no means of propulsion, therefore she'll be harmless. Just cut her loose. Don't worry about anything else.
W-12 and W-15. He's in the calibration room.
There's not much time, Mr. President. There are 2 androids coming for me. I've worked out what has to be done. Switch this channel into the traction control center, and I'll give them the release settings. It might send her into sun, but I've not had a chance to check all the details.
They're listening, Halston.
He's in there, W-12. Burn through the bulkhead if necessary.
You must get away, Halston. You're needed.
There's no time. The android will be through the bulkhead in a few seconds. There's 4 traction release settings. Tell traction control to load them as I give them so that they can release the beams as soon as I give the last setting. First setting, 379. Repeat it.
379.
Second setting, 437.
437.
That's him, W-12. Destroy him.
Third setting, 557.
557. The last setting, Halston.
Final setting, 426!
426. We're reversing the traction beams. Goodbye, Helston. Goodbye.
I will find an ally, Earth. Even if I have to wait a million years, I will find an ally, and I will conquer you. One day, Earth.
So, Halston didn't succeed in setting Solaria D on a course that would destroy it. And the Earth was content with abandoning it.
Obviously, they realized that Solaria was helpless. Unless she were to team up with Angels 1 and 2.
Where's Darv?
He was beside me just before the recording ended.
I can guess what the idiot's up to. If he tries anything with Solaria, she could turn one of her welding androids on him.
Oh, no, leave him, Telson.
But don't you see?
Leave him! He's impetuous, but he's not foolhardy. Let him try out whatever scheme he has in mind.
Hello, Darv.
Ah, hello, Solaria. I'll need your help if I'm to connect this up for you.
A radio transceiver.
So that you can contact Angel 1 and 2. I suppose it's a bit crude after what you're accustomed to. The engineering in that portable hologram replicator looked fantastic.
So you couldn't repair it?
Oh, no, never. It was all too complicated, way over my head. Which android shall I give this to? Only they'll have to be careful with it.
The androids are too clumsy for handling delicate equipment. Set it down so that I may communicate with your angels using my audio facilities.
Ah.
What's the matter? It does work.
Oh, yes. The trouble is, Solaria, that it hasn't got any audio facilities, and it's our only portable unit. I don't know much about these things, but I think the only way for you to contact Angel 1 and Angel 2 is through a direct link with this thing.
How do you propose providing that?
I don't know. Whenever our angels need to be patched into special systems, I have to go into their central switching room and make the connections in there.
They allow you in?
Yes, of course. Well, why shouldn't they? Oh, but I don't suppose you have a central switching room. You're so much more advanced than they are.
I do have a central switching room.
Oh, well, that's all right then. I don't think I'll have any problems. Oh, yes, I know. I promise not to whistle while I'm in there.
I do not understand.
Well, it's just that Angel 1 and 2 can't stand it. They say it upsets their higher-level facilities.
Very well, Darv. If you promise not to whistle, I'll let you into my central switching room.
Well, what I don't understand is why Bran wouldn't accept your reasons why the Angels want a shield built around the Challenger. If those noises are blasting them senseless, it's obvious why they want it built. Bran's not stupid.
No, but he's ambitious.
Only because that's what the angels have instilled into him.
It doesn't matter where his ambitions come from. What is important is that he and the angels learn nothing about what we've discovered here. Mm. We must never mention Nevita on the Challenger outside Darv's and Astra's room.
Why worry, Telson? Nevita 6 is meaningless to us anyway. It must be a name Earth gave their new son under a different system of nomenclature.
Mm, and we destroy all the records here.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, here's Darv at last. Open the door, someone.
Well?
Solaria doesn't exist anymore.
What do you mean? Solaria's a free-will computer.
Was a free-will computer.
But
can you imagine an alliance between her and our beloved guardian angels? Well, Solaria is finished. A victim of my boyish innocence and charm. Telson. Remember what you said about the time when you got into our angel's central switching room. They were nothing but two organic brains that could be destroyed with a couple of blows. Well, Solaria was the same, except that it took four blows.
Oh, Darv!
Well done, Darv.
Wonderful!
It's another attack.
A severe one by the sound of it.
Check the console, Shana. Make sure we're not losing any systems.
No, everything's looking okay, thanks to this shuttle's lack of computer control systems.
Can you get a direction finding fix on it?
No, it's affecting the instruments. I'm getting a reading from space.
Yes.
And a weaker signal from the star group.
It must be the loudest we've ever known it. How long was that?
10 minutes.
Oh, wow. The first attack for a long time and far, far longer than any of the others. What's the betting that a burst at that strength for that length of time has badly damaged our beloved guardian angels?
I hope so, Dove.
We'd better think about returning to the Challenger before your son starts getting abusive again.
Searching for clues as to the whereabouts of Earth was the first thing we did. I tell you, there was nothing.
Why should I believe you?
You'll see for yourself when the Challenger catches up with Solaria D.
I've no doubt that you've ensured that everything of interest was destroyed.
I found it on the optical telescope, Ram. It's on your repeater screen. Just look at it. It's so beautiful close to.
May I see, please, Elka?
Use the repeater screens, please, Astra. You don't mind, do you? Only you've been on it. But I've never seen it properly before. Oh, it's so beautiful. I wish I'd gone with you people.
And I regret not sending you with them.
Oh, use some common sense, Bran. Put yourself in the position of the people of Earth. If you had to abandon something as large and as costly as Solaria D, wouldn't you first strip it of everything likely to be of value?
What I want to know is whether or not the artificial sun contains enough material to build the Challenger's meteoroid shield.
More than enough. But you won't be able to use space mining techniques to recover it. It's too tough. Plasma blasts won't break it up as they will an asteroid. It'll need at least 500 specialist androids equipped with cutting lances.
I now have more than enough androids, Telson.
Yes.
Unlike you, when you were in command of the Challenger, I have ensured that the production of service androids has kept pace with the ship's needs.
How long before the Challenger catches up with Solaria?
30 days.
And how will you transfer the androids and their equipment once we reach it? It has an artificial atmosphere and gravity, and therefore conventional docking will be impossible, and there are hardly enough shuttles.
That's a problem I'm discussing with Angel 1 and 2, and which is none of your business. The four of you are to return to your quarters and hold yourself in readiness for any more questions I may have. I and Angel 1 and 2 are far from satisfied with your report.
Yes. I've told you everything, Bran. We are very tired and might consider answering more questions when we've rested. Guardian angels don't have much to say for themselves, do they? Was there any trouble while we were gone?
Why should you think that?
Oh, nothing.
Hello, Tidy. We're back.
Why is it that humans have been programmed to always state the obvious? Oh.
Didn't you wonder what had happened to us?
No.
Isn't it nice to feel loved and wanted?
Tidy.
What?
Did any service androids try to get into these quarters to mend the sensory tracks while we were gone?
Yes, but they always left when they saw me.
Yes, I don't blame them. And you stayed in here all the time?
Yes, but I was switched off again.
Ah, yes.
After all that time, and then this unprovoked attack. Froze up, I did. Froze right up. Nothing working. I was having an argument with one of the service units at the time, when all of a sudden, zonk.
Zonk?
Zonk.
And you froze up?
So did the service unit, but it didn't notice, when it recovered, that it hadn't been operating for 10 minutes. But I noticed, oh yes.
Dove, while Telson was reporting to Bran in the observatory, Elka and I used a telescope to study Solaria.
Mm-hmm.
I gave Elka the coordinates and she loaded them manually. I said they weren't exactly right, and it was taking us ages to locate Solaria, so I said to Elka, why don't you ask Angel 2 to do it? Well, Angel 2 isn't talking.
What?
That transmission while we were on Solaria must have wrecked him, because now I'm sure he's not working at all.
Tidy!
What?
Look, go and fetch Telson and Shana, and no arguments, please.
All right, so I'll admit that it's a possibility, but how can we be sure?
If the attacks had had more effect on Angel 2 than they had on 1, it would explain why he's been so slow in responding to requests.
It's true that he's much slower than when we were in command.
And now he's stopped altogether.
Yes. There's still Angel 1, so I don't see what good it does us.
Look, all the functions of the Challenger came under the control of the angels in the old controlled zones, right? Now, some functions they shared and some they didn't. Telson, you and I came under Angel 1, and the girls came under Angel 2, remember?
They switch control sometimes.
Right, sometimes. But each angel retained his or her overall control. Now, we know that Angel 2 had primary control over the observatory, because he was always the one to power up its systems when it was wanted, just as Angel 1 seemed to have overall control of the suspended animation chamber.
And they both controlled the main control room.
Hold on, we're rushing ahead. Firstly, we still know next to nothing about the angels' rebuilding of the ship. What we do know is that they've changed everything so that we don't even know where the main control room is.
Well, surely they've only changed the ship physically. I mean, all right, they've built a new central switching room somewhere, but they wouldn't have altered their own functions. What would be the point?
Exactly. If Angel 2 is finished, then we ought to be able to gain control of all the functions he was responsible for.
If Angel 1 lets us.
How could she stop us? She can't run the entire ship. Otherwise, why did the builders provide it with two organic free will computers and divide their responsibilities?
Oh, yes. She'd find a way. She has an armory of psychological weapons, or had you forgotten?
If the transmissions have caused Angel 2 to break down, how much longer do you think Angel 1 can last?
If Angel 2 has broken down, we've no definite proof that he has.
All right, so let's find out.
Well, how? We've cut the monitoring tracks. Do we wander along the corridors, calling out his name?
Well, it's one way.
Two. How much longer?
The severity of the attack is making regeneration extremely difficult, one. And I'm experiencing grave problems with Android Surgeon General Kraken in the main control room. You must assume control of his higher levels to allow me time to regenerate.
We cannot afford any time. And my assuming control of Kraken is out of the question. I am finding it impossible to store so many levels of your memory during your regeneration periods and to assimilate new information at the same time. If I cannot make plans to counter the attacks, then we are finished.
Very well, too. But why did you disturb me?
All four have left their quarters.
What four?
Telson, Shana, Astra, and Darv. My suspicions are aroused. I am convinced that they have learned the whereabouts of Earth in the Star Group during their visit to Solaria D.
If that is so, one, it is imperative that you obtain that information.
Why are all four of them out at this time unless they are planning something?
You must use an android to stop them entering my areas, one. I can do nothing for several hours. The damage caused by the last attack was greater than I first suspected. Perhaps you should alert Bran and Elka.
And admit that we have been weakened? If the four address you, I will deal with them.
I will help you if I can, one. But it will delay my regeneration.
Right. This corridor will do. Okay. You ready, Astra?
Yes. Angel 2! Angel 2!
Yes, Astra.
Oh. Hello again, One. So you've taken over this corridor as well, have you? Doesn't Angel 2 have any responsibilities now?
The rebuilding of the Challenger is a continuous process. Functions and controls are under constant review and are being reassigned all the time. There is little point in your continuing with this juvenile game of wandering through the corridors. Calling for Angel 2.
We would like to visit the observatory. Or is the observatory another reassigned function?
Yes, Astra. You may visit the observatory. You should know the way by now. You will have to manage without our assistance because we are planning the construction of the new meteoroid shield.
We had exactly the same experience, Telson. Over 20 corridors tested and not one response from Angel 2. It was always Angel 1 who replied.
So it looks as if Angel 2 is disabled. It has to be Earth who is responsible for the attacks. If only they would increase their intensity.
Well, it's incredible that they're at the level they are. I mean, even assuming Earth is now in orbit around the nearest sun in the star group, the energy that they must be pouring into space during the attacks must be approaching the output of a main sequence star.
Contacting Earth and getting them to increase the frequency of the attacks is now our number one priority.
Yes, but how? The nearest star in the group is 4 light months away. If that's the Earth's home, then we'll have an 8-month wait. But the Earth's home could easily be the most distant star in the group, meaning that we'd have to wait 20 years.
That's odd.
What is?
Hang on.
What?
Astra, help me with the telescope calculations for a moment, will you?
Oh, all right.
Now, Darv, this is what we'll do. The next time there's an attack, we'll all head for the observatory immediately. Shana can work the direction-finding radio telescope manually, so there's just a chance that we could pinpoint the transmission's exact source. What do you think?
It's an idea. Except that we may have to wait years for another attack.
Oh, there might be one tomorrow. Their frequency is completely erratic. The important thing is to have a plan of action when there is one.
Hooray!
What are you girls looking for?
Solaria D. We found it. Range is now just under 20,000 miles.
Well, it couldn't have been difficult finding it. You were already set up on it.
But it wasn't where it should have been. I noticed as soon as we came in here. There, it's on your repeater screen. Smack in line with the Diamond constellation in Atari.
So?
I've done some calculations for Shana.
Solaria is 3 degrees out of position.
You must have made a mistake. Solaria had no means
of
propulsion.
I have not made a mistake, Telson.
I'll back her up there, Telson. The one thing Astra's good at is adding up.
I'll deal with you later.
Look, there's nothing to joke about. Either Solaria D does have a propulsion system, or something's causing her to be deflected from her true path. And ours, too, if we're on a radar-controlled auto-course lock.
We're getting odd readings on everything.
It's so infuriating the way all the computer-controlled instruments have lost their calibration. Mm. There's a light and gravitational distortion that must be connected with Solaria's deflection, and yet I can't measure it.
Well, it could be a cumulative error in all the observatory's instrumentation.
No, I don't think so. I'm certain it's something much more serious.
What are you doing in here?
Oh, Bran, look, there's something I'd like you to see.
I'm not interested in what you would like. What I would like is all of you out of here
immediately. Now, you listen to me. Angel One gave us permission to
stay
here.
I'm the commander of this ship, not Angel One. You want anything, you ask me. Now, get back to your quarters. I'm not interested in any argument. Out!
Astra, wake up!
What?
Wake up! Astra!
What's happening?
It's another attack. We've got to get to the observatory and find out where it's coming from before it stops. Come on!
There's nothing, according to the spectrum analyzers.
Go into the sonic frequency range.
How could they transmit sound through space?
Well, we've always heard some form of harmonic generated through the hull, so it's worth trying.
We're never going to pinpoint it. It seems to be coming from two sources.
I found something on the optical telescope.
What?
It's on your repeaters.
Wow.
Oh, how could we or the angels have missed that? Circle of black nothingness.
We missed it, all right. Solaria D is plunging into a black hole. And we're following it.
In Sun Death, Part 5 of Earth Search 2 by James Follett, Sean Arnold played Commander Telson, Amanda Murray Shana, Hayden Wood Darv, and Catherine Hurlbut Astra. Angel 1 was played by Sonia Fraser, and Angel 2 by Gordon Reed. Bran was Michael Maloney, Elka Jill Lidston, Tidy David Goodison, Solaria Pauline Letts, Elkaran Nicholas Courtney, and Halston David McAllister. Earth Search 2 is directed by Glenn Dearman.
Now on BBC World Service, In Search of Vadim Kozin.
I live in oblivion.
Kozin was a singing superstar in the Soviet Union, but at the height of his success, he was disappeared to exile in Siberia, from where he never returned.
When you think that once the name Kozin thundered across the country, I'm like a dead man, body and soul.
The British pop star, Mark Almond, goes to Moscow to unravel the mystery of one of his musical heroes, Vadim Kozin.
For me, it's all in the voice. I love Vadim Kozin's pure, beautiful voice, with his expressive lyrical quality. I first heard it 20 years ago and it changed my life, opened a door to a new world for me. With our words of love or passion, we know. I spent 3 years in Moscow soaking up this music, singing and playing and recording. And I even had Kozin's songs translated into English, and I made an album. Gives us more warmth than love can ever give. In times of joy, in times of sadness, the sparks of laughter. I became drawn into Kozin's story back in 1992. The Soviet Union had collapsed, and I was invited on a tour of Russia, somewhere I'd never dreamt of going, especially its Far East. When I arrived in Siberia and going to some of the towns like Omsk and Novosibirsk, all the trees were dead. You'd see things like burnt-out aircraft. I just remember lots of rust. It was freezing cold. A bare stage, one single spotlight. A butter piano that was out of tune.
But what I loved was just the audiences and the people. The whole audience queues up afterwards to get something signed. So you get the babushka grandmothers giving me a jam they'd made or some flowers, and then bashful-looking sailors in sailor uniforms. And so they bought me cassettes, many, many cassettes of Russian singers. And Kozin's name kept coming up again and again and again. But the man himself was a mystery. I knew Kozin was a star in the Soviet Union before the war, and that in 1944 Stalin had him arrested and sent to a prison camp in Siberia. But that was about it. There are very few traces of Kozin left. There are a handful of photographs and a notebook, a fragment of a diary.
Life is so strange. You have glory, honour. Poets praise you, artists paint you better than you are. And then nothing. Silence.
What we have are pieces of the puzzle of Vadim Kozin. It's like an archaeologist trying to imagine an entire civilization from shards of pottery.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Misha.
Nice to meet
How
you.
Are you?
Welcome, please.
We need to start with something solid, tangible. Oh, the music. I want to find an original Kozin. So we've come to meet a lifelong collector of gramophone records.
It's a very small apartment, you understand.
This is beautiful. Beautiful things. Please tell us about some of the things in the apartment.
This isn't vinyl. This is shellac. My name is Mikhail Kunitsin. I have many different records. We can see here.
Oh, wow. What a wonderful collection.
Records. My grandmother, she's been in Vadim Kozin concert, 1938, and after Vadim Kozin sent to my grandmother gramophone records. And I have these records.
So Vadim Kozin sent this record to your grandmother?
Yes, yes.
Часто сердишься все зря, злость твоя напрасная, ж люблю тебя.
Когда я был маленьким, я никогда ни по радио, ни по телевизору, нигде.
Миша grew up knowing Kozin only from these records. He never once heard his name on the radio or TV. No one knew if Kozin was alive or dead. His grandmother felt sure he died.
Потому что даже моя бабушка думала, что Вадим Козин уже умер.
Не уходи, еще не спето столько песен, и еще звенит в гитаре каждая струна.
Autumn, or Osin, was a huge hit. Even today, everyone knows it. Vadim Kozin was born around 1905 in St. Petersburg. His mother, Vera, sang in a gypsy chorus. He had three sisters, and their apartment was filled with music. He was 12 when the Russian Revolution exploded their world. Dan Healy, professor of Russian history at Oxford University.
He is young at the time of the revolution, and that's very exciting. Leningrad at that time is full of fantastic experiment, fantastic artistic endeavor.
Kozin's father died young, so Vadim, aged about 18, became the family breadwinner.
He is gifted as a singer, and he makes his way as a pianist and a singer in the silent cinemas of Petrograd, Leningrad, in the 1920s.
Kozin began singing gypsy-style songs, tangos and romances, songs of love and longing, what we might call torch songs. Sleep, my poor heart, he sings. Our love is a secret.
моя бедное сердце, наша любовь — это тайна.
It's music that goes back to the 19th century. In a way, a Russian blues of evenings where people would just get together and sing and have fun.
Alexander Kahn is a music critic and jazz writer, and he works for the BBC Russian service.
Singers like Kozin were using the existing musical tradition and they paired it with the syncopation and with the instrumentation of jazz. And lots of Jewish elements were brought in, the klezmer elements, the music of the shtetl. At the same time, there was allowed a return to the kind of old music of pre-revolutionary times. And it was flourishing in cinemas and in theaters everywhere.
Люба, you can hear Козин's precision and control in this love song.
The 1920s was an extremely bright and varied and rich period in Soviet culture.
By the middle 1930s, he's becoming a bigger and bigger seller, a big star.
So that's three concerts, 51 songs in 3 days. 224 minutes, or 3 hours, 44 minutes. In 13 more concerts, we will reach 100. Tomorrow I will buy material for a summer suit. It's a nice grey material with a white stripe at 200 rubles a metre.
Moscow is an electric city, always crackling with energy, always racing with traffic. It seems to demolish its past, but in among the skyscrapers you can still find other, older Moscows, other deeper layers. In 1937, Kozin moved here to chance his arm in the new Soviet capital, where the theatres were bigger. Lucky stars might shine more brightly.
We have to imagine not just one Moscow in 1937, but several Moscows at the time. In the 1930s is mass famine in the countryside, mass terror building up in the cities, more and more people moving into the cities to escape collectivization and famine in the countryside, but also to join the new industrial projects of the first five-year plans, which make everybody's lives very, very miserable, very grey, because food is very scarce. Many of the people who are taken out by the Great Terror in 1937 and 1938 are replaced by ambitious people who are on the up. So against that backdrop, someone like Kozin, who has a happy, upbeat, romantic, apolitical kind of offer on the stage, becomes very, very popular.
Тихий день угасал, подымался туман. Я сидела над рекою, мечтая, и вспоминал, как
зима. Walking into a very old Moscow building, pale yellow, paint peeling, posters everywhere, stuck on things. Walking up a beautiful wrought iron staircase with wooden banisters, slightly faded red carpet as we walk up the stairs. We're here to think through Kozin's Moscow life with the entertainer and cultural historian Yevgeny Panasenkov.
He had a great commercial success. Even we needed the police before the doors of concert halls. Many photos In every shop, we could buy his photo.
The photos show us a small, dark-eyed man, rather diffident in his stylish suit. They're signed with a flourish. Cosin began to perform on all Union radio. He became known in a very modern sort of way, not just a stage singer, but a celebrity.
I think almost all people in Moscow and Leningrad, in every flat, in every family, they had his gramophone records. When you are walking along the street, you heard this record, these songs, yes? And you see, at that period, every man can sing this repertoire. Веселье час и боль разлуки хочу делить с тобой всегда. Давай пожмем друг другу руки и в дальний путь на долгие года. Yes. Now we use internet, YouTube, we just stop singing.
Я люблю вас так безумно, вы открыли к счастью путь. Сон нарушен безмятежный.
One thing you often hear mentioned is that Cosin was homosexual.
Yes, yes. In Leningrad, he lived like an open homosexual man. In the 1920s and 1930s, there was new styles of thinking of life. And according to the laws just after the revolution, there was no article against homosexuals. No article.
If only I could just once, for a moment, look into the depths of his eyes again. His name will always be a secret, but I've fallen in love like a boy or a girl does. I need nothing from him, just to look into his eyes for hours.
As Stalin entrenched his power, he invented new categories of criminal. In 1934, he made male homosexuality illegal.
But real life is nothing like that.
If you'd come out after the revolution, what could you do now? To emigrate? Marry? Hide in plain sight?
How to say? If you want to live like that, you should be a friend of KGB.
And if you weren't friendly with the regime, if you fell out with the regime or didn't do what the regime said, then the file would be brought out. Yeah. And that would be used against you. So there was a tolerance if it was useful.
It's not a question of tolerance, it's a question of hypocrisy.
Hypocrisy, yeah.
And you see, there are many people who was homosexual, and they was very famous. And even Ministry of NKVD, at that time KGB named NKVD, Yezhov, the friend of Stalin and the organizer of repressions, yeah, he was a homosexual.
Граждане, братья и сестры, бойцы нашей армии и флота, к вам обращаемся.
When Nazi Germany invaded the Soviet Union in 1941, popular singers got behind the war effort. They toured vast distances to hungry cities and right to the battlefront to rally the soldiers.
Опущенной с плеч, ты обещала, что не забудешь ласковых, радостных встреч.
We found one photo from this time. Cosin surrounded by cheering sailors, hanging off the warship to listen to him sing. Here he is singing the wartime classic Blue Headscarf. In the terrible September of 1941, German troops laid siege to Leningrad and cut all roads to the outside world. 2.5 million souls were trapped inside. It was the start of the longest and deadliest blockade in modern times. 1,000 civilians were killed in just one air raid, one day.
The worst time for the blockade is